Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I'd like to welcome all of you back to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder. Here at the beginning of the show, I'm just going to share a little bit from Love Teaching Letter number 27, which talks about the love of creation. Love, of course, is the highest principle of creation, and through it, everything exists in absolute logic. Every tiny plant and every tiny animal fulfills its purpose in love. Love will forever be the reason for our existence. Love and wisdom go together in the creation, and its laws are love and wisdom at the same time. The incredible splendor of nature is the visible expression of the love of creation. The love of creation is everywhere, because without it, nothing at all would be able to exist. The individual should therefore be aware that he exists only through the love of creation, and he carries this love within himself. Creation created everything in love and logic, and put the same love in all of its creatures, so that life itself is love. Even if living in this world often seems to consist only of conflict and drudgery, this fact does not change. You know, when Billy was a young boy growing up in Switzerland, he had a kind of an epiphany one night, and in May, he woke up maybe at 3 or 4 a.m. and climbed out a lower window and looked up at the beautiful starry sky, and he said that, "I recognized that the light which the stars emitted was a light in the visible spectrum. However, that the light of true love remained invisible, creational, and for all great time." And then Billy goes on to explain that something strange happened. He said, "However, suddenly something peculiar happened inside of me, which from the next moment irrevocably changed my whole life. Strangely touched, I looked at my hands and my body, and I could only vaguely recognize them. So I touched my body and felt it, and then I heard my own voice say, 'My life is made out of the love of creation.' And I could not explain why I said that, and which power led me to speak these words. A slight shiver came over me, although the night was quite warm, and when I noticed that I also felt peculiar, nevertheless, I was not frightened." Now, this was a very profound experience that Billy had when he was a very, very young boy. This is before his contacts with Thoth. He was getting signals from the universal storage banks, and there are storage banks for the planet, for the solar system, for the galaxy, and for the universe. And this little writing that I'm quoting from comes from this article Billy wrote called How It All Began. And Billy would continue and say, "I looked up to the stars and I recognized that the stars were distant suns in the vast outer space, and that these shone by means of their own power, by themselves, even though they were created from the light of the love of creation, as is everything in the whole universe." There is a very interesting passage in the Goblet of Truth that is very analogous to what Billy is talking about here. I think it's entitled, "What the Truth knows to say. And it goes on and says something to the effect that rivers, stones, plants, animals, bushes, trees, everything that crawls and flies on the earth is a life form with a spirit form. And these spirit forms are on a journey through time, which involve many, many lifetimes. And that death is just the passage into rebirth, into the world of pure spirit. And that many of these creatures are connected to one another by psychic vibrations, as it's called, or swinging waves, as they're talked about in some of the other Meyer writings. So if you go into the forest and you see birds flying as a unit, or you look in a stream or a lake and see fish swimming as a unit, that's because everything is connected. And one of the big problems with humanity is that we've lost our connection to all things. And these Meyer passages on love remind us of our connection with all things. Everything in the universe is one, and it's all bound together. And then Billy explains it this way. He said, everything is created out of the light of love. And then further words followed. And this is something that Billy was saying. He was being inspired by these impulses coming from the storage banks. And these could have been the thoughts and words of his former lifetimes. I'm purely speculating there. And he said, now this is very profound in what exactly it means. Some of this I'm going to continue to try to learn. It says the space between the stars is empty and yet not empty. And everything that exists in the whole universe is a living vision. Everything is creation and creation itself. And Billy explained this, and he said, the words which came from my own mouth penetrated deeply into me. There's something very interesting going on here. In them, I recognize the true source of light is the light of the true creational love, which in its vitality creates all life and contains within itself all laws and recommendations of creational order and all information about life and death. Now, notice it says everything is created out of the light of love. Does it mean that light is an aspect of love literally? Or is light being used as a metaphor? Or could it be that to an extent life, that light is an aspect of the love of creation, perhaps? Again, there is a both visible and invisible aspect to light. It seems that light plays a role in the creation aspect of all things. You know, animals, human beings, we all get comfort from light. And light is something that helps our mentality. It makes us mentally healthier to have it bright outside, to have a blue sky, to have the sun shining. And the Meyer material says, everything is created out of the light of love. Now, and notice your thinking changes profoundly when you are contemplating the love of creation. It is exactly the opposite of negative thought. Negative thoughts grow wildly, and they create suffering and confusion. One of the things I try to remind myself is that we should nurture our good thoughts, clarify them, strengthen them. And this is part of our mental health process. To steer our ship, to steer our thoughts, to have good thoughts, and then from those good thoughts produce good feelings, and have those good feelings again produce good habits. And good habits ultimately result in good circumstances in your life. So you have to be responsible for your thoughts. Thinking about the love of creation is very healthy. Thinking negative thoughts is very destructive. Now, the love of creation is everywhere, because without it, nothing would be able to exist. You should be aware that you exist only because of the love of creation. And you carry the love of creation within you. All of nature in its indescribable splendor is nothing but the love of creation expressed visibly. And the Meyer information says, the laws of creation are wonderfully arranged, and we come up against this radiating love. Nature can be defined as the natural world without human beings or civilization. Nature is the perfect reflection of the love of creation, and there's nothing more important. You know, instead of making life a joy, very many human beings make it the exact opposite. And they do this through being grumpy. They waste their lives away. They ruin their lives as a result of explosive outbursts, and thereby destroy everything, which is beautiful and splendid, which broadens your horizons and is enlivening in every regard. And unfortunately, the great part of humanity is sick with a kind of negativism. I was thinking about that the other day, and I was realizing that one of the things that's so important about this material is it gives people a way to fight back and maintain their mental health. And they have a way, once they learn these techniques, that they can stop themselves from drifting into negativism. So one of the things we have to learn is not to allow our thoughts to drift. Most human beings allow their thought boats to drive unchecked on the ocean of consciousness and unconscious intentions. And that's where the unhealthy, wrong, negative, and destructive thoughts come in. These negative and destructive thoughts start to enter our mind, and it makes your body susceptible to illnesses and disease. It weakens the immune system. So what we need to do is have constructive, beautiful, positive thoughts. That's why I pulled out some passages about the love of creation. And you have to learn to have a conscious and an unconscious purposefulness to your thoughts, to bring your thoughts to fruition. You have to have a purposefulness. The mind of thoughts is effective when there is a definite intention. The Meyer material says, setting of a seal, let's call it a seal, till I get a better pronunciation. So that's your aim, your life determination, your the culmination point is probably a better way to do this. So your conscious mind is only aware at the present moment. Sometimes we're said to have three minds: the conscious mind, the subconscious, and the unconscious. The unconscious mind processes things very quickly. If you touch a hot stove, it's your unconscious mind that pulls back before the conscious mind can even realize what's happened. I really believe your unconscious mind is what plays and creates music. You have to learn things if you're playing a piano or a saxophone or a guitar. You have to learn, repeat these passages until you can do them unconsciously. You don't have to think about them. Because, in fact, if you do think about them, that will throw you off. Your mind has to be a receiver. Tesla talked about that. About, he said his mind was a receiver. And that's what you need to bring, make your mind a receiver. So your conscious mind is awareness at the present moment. Your conscious mind is your objective or thinking mind. It has no memory, they say. It can only hold on to one thought at a time. So your conscious mind is the following. It identifies things, it compares things, it does analysis, and the conscious mind makes a decision. Now you have a subconscious mind, which is sometimes called a preconscious mind, that consists of available information. You become aware of this information once you direct your attention to it. It is possible that some of what might be perceived to be unconscious becomes subconscious and then conscious. For example, a long forgotten childhood memory suddenly bubbles upwards. The unconscious mind sometimes consists of these primitive instinctual wishes as well as information we cannot access at all. The unconscious is the part of the mind that is inaccessible to the conscious mind. It affects your behaviors. It affects your emotions as well. Your unconscious mind has feelings, thoughts, urges, memories that are even outside of your awareness. Many of the contents of the unconscious mind are unpleasant. So keep that in mind. No pun intended. The unconscious mind is often represented as an iceberg, with everything above the water as your conscious awareness, but the great vast majority is below the surface of the water. Everything below the water represents the unconscious of this giant iceberg. Freud believed that many of our feelings, desires, and emotions are repressed and held out of awareness. And sometimes we do that because these thoughts are too threatening. So the Meyer material teaches us as much as possible to be purposeful in our thinking, in our conscious mind. So purposefulness means to be intentional, having or manifesting a purpose. Like you enter a room with a purposeful look. Purposefulness can be determined as well, which I think a purpose is something set up as an end to be attained. And intentions mean an aim or a plan. So you can set a seal, as it's called. It's spelled zeal with a Z. And we do that consciously or unconsciously. It's very interesting that we have our unconscious mind is setting these endpoints for us. We have conscious strivings towards the seal, rather, we also have unconscious ones. Very, very, very interesting situation. You know, we're also told by the Meyer information to live and help live, to help nature and to help the animals and other people as much as possible, and also help yourself. How do we help ourselves? Now, this is important. Dreamers, visionaries, fantasizers, and the laws of cause and effect. The Meyer material says it's the dreamers, the visionaries, and the fantasizers that are most enthusiastic about evolution. He calls them the saviors of the world. A visionary is a person with original ideas about the future, about how they will, become or be like. A fantasizer is a person who imagines or dreams about something desired. So Billy says, we should never forget or insult our dreamers, our visionaries. We should never insult those gifted with imagination, because it is exactly their ideas which bring about progress and success. This is from page 204 of the Mind of Thoughts. It says, they do not know about all the effort behind the imagining and the wishes, which every seal-striving human being must take upon himself or herself in order to overcome the apparently invincible, which is necessary so that the vision, the rumination, or the fantasy can be brought to fruition. Okay, what is a rumination? See, this is how you harness your thoughts. This is how you imagine better circumstances in your life, better circumstances at work, better circumstances at home. You imagine them. You have an ultimate endpoint in your mind, and this can become a rumination. A rumination is a deep or considered thought about something. Another definition of rumination is to go over in the mind repeatedly, often casually, or slowly. Another meaning of rumination is to chew. So you're chewing on this thought. It's a mental image of what the future could or will be like. So you're imagining better circumstances at home, better circumstances at work, better circumstances with your loved one. And you're going over this thought in your mind over and over again. And you're going to eventually take some action to try to bring that about. A vision is the ability to think or plan about the future. A vision is an experience. Some people say there's such a thing as like a supernatural apparition. As zeal is striven for, it often recedes again into the distance, so you have to continue. You have to be confident. You have to be optimistic. And these are the things I tell myself over and over again. This will help you when you get lost in negative thinking. We all have pressures, you know. It's a strange scenario. We have very, very difficult pressures at times, so tell yourself, I'm confident, I'm optimistic, I'm relaxed, I'm cheerful, I'm thankful, I'm enthusiastic, I'm in harmony. See, out of the harmony in your spirit, in your consciousness, comes your enthusiasm. And your enthusiasm is what creates good circumstances in your life. So, tell yourself, I persist, I persevere, I endure, I am calm, I am satisfied. So this is the way to get your thoughts back in the correct path. See, your thoughts are like a garden. You're the master of your own destiny. You're the forger of your own fortune. You create your own good luck by good thoughts, good feelings, good habits, and good circumstances. Your good thoughts, my good thoughts, create good feelings, and good feelings create more good thoughts. And pretty soon, your consciousness is like a flourishing garden filled with flourishing, healthy, green plants, and you have a whole lot of enthusiasm in your life, and you're moving forward. Not that you reject the negative, because the negative and the positive are two powers that belong together, and they should never be separated. They depend on one another. So you steer your thoughts. So you have good thoughts, good feelings, good habits. You clarify your thoughts. You create the boundaries between thoughts. You take out the confusion by repeating things. Do not allow yourselves to drift on the ocean of life. Rather, take the helm in hand and steer the ship to solid ground. Always take the helm firm in hand and do not let any waves rip them away from you. Optimism is a prerequisite for the constancy in life. So the whole thing here is you're going to control your anxiety so your anxiety does not control you. And you're going to get to the bottom of what is producing your anxiety so you can start to correct that so you do not have anxiety. Much of the negative thinking comes from a lack of confidence, self-doubt, and anxiety. And I can remember not such a long time ago when I still sometimes plagued myself with doubt. Telling yourself you're confident starts to break the cycle of negative thinking. And we gain control over our anxiety so it does not gain control over us. Be careful of those around you that have already gone so far into the negative abyss that they may not be able to get out. You know, if you're positive, if you're optimistic, if you're cheerful, you will attract that positivity to you. Heiterkeit is a German word for cheerfulness. And there's a website out there called dict.cc where you can listen to German words. Heiterkeit, as it's called, is a German word for cheerfulness. Cheerfulness is the state of being noticeably happy and optimistic. Cheerfulness is likely to dispel gloom and worry. And there is an interesting passage in the Meditation from Clear Visibility, which is one of Billy's books. It says, I feel joy's testimony within myself and feel it with cheerfulness, diligence, and indefatigability, meaning I continue, I never fatigue. And it is the very ones who maintain contact with human beings who in every regard make evident a vision of equalizedness and whose behavior is pleasant and harmonious. Again, you're going to attract people to you. The fact is that strong, calm, knowledgeable, wise, peaceful, joyous, loving, open, and freely thinking human beings who are equipped with lived practical experiences are loved, respected, and deferentially regarded by the majority of human beings because for those who respect them, they are not only an incentive to be the same way, rather, they are a wellspring of adherence to the creational laws and recommendations. So this neutral positive thinking that we're talking about now, these are creational natural laws. This is how, these are the laws of nature in terms of how you think. And one of the things you have to have is calmness. That means you're not showing or feeling nervousness, anger, or emotion. The verb calm means to make someone tranquil and quiet, to soothe them. And calm is mentioned in Svath's explanation. He says, learn to control yourself in these things and to always remain calm because that is the best weapon and the best defense against any attack. In case you're new to this show, Edward Albert Meyer, Billy Meyer, is an 80-year-old man in Switzerland. Back around World War II, starting right around 1943, he started to get telepathic messages from an extraterrestrial human named Svath, who was nearly 1,000 years old. Svath eventually told Billy to meet him in a particular area in the area of Bulak, Switzerland. So Svath landed a silvery pear-shaped craft, got out of the craft. Eventually, Billy was brought up into the ship as if by ghostly hands, it says, and the ship went up in Earth orbit. And Billy started to learn about what was really going on here on the Earth. And he was told about his previous lifetimes, the fact that he had been Enoch, Elijah, Isaiah, Jeremiah, Emmanuel, and Muhammad, and that in this lifetime he would teach a universal teaching that was evidently brought to the earth by these extraterrestrial humans thousands of years ago in our past. And Thoth was here to be a mentor for young Edward Albert Meyer for the first, these next 11 years of his life, from when Billy was about 5 years old or so to about 16 years. He told Billy that there would be a war in... There was already war, but he told Billy that there would be atomic bombs dropped on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. He told Billy that there would be historical trends that would occur, negative historical trends, that would include the people of the earth becoming indolent and obtuse, slow to understand, and lazy, and that people would become... like zombies, so to speak, we would become mentally ill. The whole book here, The Might of Thoughts, is dedicated to a humankind that is ill in its consciousness. So this, all this spiritual teaching is about getting us to think correctly again, to getting us to harness the strength of our thoughts. Billy was told by Thoth to stay in the background, to not to go in the public too much, that people would come forward and tell his story. Thoth realized at some point, I believe, that Billy had a very ancient spirit form. He knew that this spirit form was at least 13,000 years old. It had been on the earth as the people that we call Henoch, Emmanuel, Rasputin, a Russian peasant who taught much spiritual material, Galileo, Mendelssohn, Mozart, Aristotle, Socrates, if I'm not mistaken, and an individual, I believe, named Semyatha during the time of Atlantis and Lemuria. But his most ancient personality that we know about is an individual called Nocodemian or Nocodemjan, who these extraterrestrials regarded as their own spiritual teacher. So in previous lives, Billy even taught the Pleiaren. And he taught the spiritual teachings, that much of the spiritual teachings that we have available to us right now. Now, Billy was amazing as a young boy. He had the mentality of a 35-year-old man. And Thoth put a device on his head, which was covered with wires, that would awaken abilities that he had in his previous lifetimes. You see, our subconscious is programmed with the evolutive essences of our previous lifetimes. So our love, our wisdom, our knowledge, our discernment, our optimism, our enthusiasm is programmed into our subconscious. And Billy's subconscious also contained the ability to look into the future. So young Edward Albert Meyer would start to have visions as he continued to grow older, and he would start to look into the future. And he saw in 2020, right around 2020, a civil war in the United States. He saw a tremendous earthquake in San Francisco. He saw hurricanes and he saw fires, which we see now is coming to fruition. He saw warfare, and he mentions fighter bombers. He also saw a potential for a horrific disaster in North America that involves the release of chemical weapons, nuclear weapons, and the release of these weapons will occur from a mechanized source, some kind of automated system which runs outside of human control. These are the Henoch prophecies. And Henoch is one of the former lives of Edward Albert Meyer. Edward Albert Meyer is known as the universal prophet. What does that mean? That's a spirit form that reincarnates on planets to speed up the evolution on the planet. And we here on the Earth are ill in our consciousness, and we are behind in our evolution. We're still stuck in stage two. There are seven stages of human evolution. And part of that is not our own fault. Most of it is, but part of it is because the extraterrestrials who came here, the Lyrians, the Plearians, had negative groups which tried to take advantage of the people of the Earth. And as it says in one of Billy's books called the Omphalan Murado, the Navel of Life, it says that the gods of the Earth were human, and they came from the depths of space, from strange worlds, and they demanded kind of a worship, and they created a tyranny, and they were brutal. And some of these extraterrestrials were called the Giza Intelligences, and they had underneath the Great Pyramid of Giza a series of underground structures that were 73,000 years old, which is the age of the Great Pyramid according to the Meyer information. And after the fall of Atlantis and Lemuria, a series of very negative rulers came about that had their headquarters underneath the Giza Plateau. Some of their names were Jehave, Jehovan, Arasame, who was the first official leader of this Giza Intelligences. Jehovah, who is the god of the Old Testament, who is also known as Hen, sometimes called the Cruel One. Imagine, according to Meyer information, many people worship one of these negative extraterrestrials who presented himself as the creator of the universe, who manifested himself as a burning bush, who gave commands, some of which were reasonably good, who destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah with a nuclear, two small nuclear weapons, I believe, as well as there was an earthquake that happened, as well as a small meteor. But these Giza Intelligences were around all the way up to World War II. One of them was called Comegall the First, the other one was called Comegall the Second. And one of the two Comegalls must have lived for a very long time. And one of these people, Comegall the First or Comegall the Second, influenced the Thule Society in Germany, or sometimes called the Thule Society. And through a man named Hermann Steinschneider, who was known as Erich Jonassohn at that time, Hitler became influenced by these negative extraterrestrials who used a kind of telenotic impulse that kind of put people in a hypnotic state. And Hitler, who had been positively impulsed by the Plearian to be a very benevolent and healthy, good ruler for the people of the Earth, became a tyrant, very much like the Giza Intelligences. And he tried to, he overran France, he conquered, I believe it was Belgium, he conquered Poland, he got areas of Austria back for his people, he attacked Great Britain, and his great blunder was going into Russia. And at that point in his life, he was very maniacal. And he was being influenced by this Hermann Steinschneider, who was also in turn influenced by these Giza Intelligences, who were on the Earth until about the middle 1970s. And I often think of the people of the Earth as being like a cargo cult in the Pacific, in that many of us are just waiting for our gods to return, just the way the people in the Pacific on these islands are waiting for John Frum an American GI to return. Who knows if that was his real name? Maybe he's symbolic of many of these GIs who brought with them all sorts of technologies. So we here on the earth are ill in our consciousness. We've been messed with by extraterrestrials, human beings who in many ways created our sects and our religions. And the Meyer material says there is no salvation teaching. Now this is a real slap in the face of Christianity, but the Meyer material says there is no salvation teaching, and therefore such a teaching also cannot be supported, because truthfully every single human being creates his own salvation from his own thoughts and their might, as well as through his feelings, his acts, his deeds, according to how he or she controls the obligation of his or her responsibility, lives and manages his life in accord to all this. So you are responsible for your own life. You're responsible for your thoughts, your deeds, and cheerfulness is more valuable for the human being than gold, platinum, or diamonds. It is a work of knowledge, of wisdom, and practical experience. True cheerfulness is very important. It's a circumstance of life which is based in the ocean of truth, in which waves endlessly keep everything in motion, and yet they preserve calmness and peace deep below, where beyond the storms, the life is created and maintained in an unimagined degree of diversity. So people grumpily waste their lives and ruin their lives because of explosive outbursts, and thereby destroy everything which is beautiful and splendid, which broadens one's horizons and is enlivening. The great majority of terrestrial humanity, they are sick with this negativism. So one of the things that we're trying to do is free ourselves from this negativity. One of the ways to stop the negativity is confidence and optimism, hopefulness, cheerfulness. Optimistic behavior enables a human being to see and acknowledge the clear truth, even in the negative situation. But we recognize the negative. We do not try to separate the negative and the positive, because the negative and the positive are two powers that belong together, and they produce a kind of a balance. So you're optimistic, but you know about the negative aspect of things. You are cheerful, but that doesn't mean you don't know about the negative. You are aware of the negative. You're enthusiastic, but you're still aware of the negative. So we don't want to become wildly positive. We want to say neutral positive. Neutral positive. You know, the path of evolution is fairly long. And it takes us, in fact, billions of years of reincarnations. And in each one of these reincarnations, we're going to be dealing with creational natural laws. When we talked earlier about the law of love, the other great creational natural law is the law of striving. Striving will bring you happiness. Without striving, there is no happiness. To be without striving means affliction. Affliction is inhibited striving and inhibited life. But inhibited striving and inhibited life bring inhibited evolution, stagnation, hopelessness, grief, confusion. Are you suffering from hopelessness, grief, and confusion? Ask yourself, can I work just a little bit harder? And as you make yourself work just a little bit harder, do you notice that you get some relief from your grief, from your confusion, from your irrationality, from your joylessness? We'll try working then again even a little harder. And you'll notice that your disharmony starts to go away. Your unpeace goes away. Your self-deceit starts going away. So you work even a little bit harder. And your reluctance for life goes away. In fact, you used to be joyless. Now you're starting to have some happiness. Your happiness is depending on the degree and the strength of your striving. Your striving can assert itself in the world. The power of your thoughts is the nature of thoughts that by their might alone, every conceivable thing can be brought into fruition. What you think, you make real. What you think about yourself, you become. Even in death, there's striving in the other world as the spirit form goes through all your life circumstances. And it's converting those thoughts into their evolutive values. It's procuring the wisdom of your previous life and absorbing it, your spirit form is. And that occurs in something called the overall consciousness block. In the other realm, this overall consciousness block is a storage bank for processing the information that occurred in your previous life. And this activity is the striving that goes on in death on the other realm. There is really no stopping striving. Striving goes on in the material world. Striving goes on in the fine matter world. Death is an interlude between the two lives in the level of the realm of the other world in which striving finds its progress and keeps the life alive. Your spirit form is alive in the other realm as it's processing your previous life and taking those evolutive values and putting those evolutive values into your new subconscious. The power from our thinking, the impetus for our thinking, does not stem from ourselves. The power of our thinking streams in the spirit, coming out of the immeasurable expanses of space of the universe. It stems from the tremendous wealth of the Ur-life of the creation, which is responsible for the life of the entire universe. So the power of your thoughts is associated with the power of the universe. And it would be very false, arrogant, and irresponsible to name the creation God, because the creation is neither God nor anything similar. The word God is only an age-old term from a likewise age-old language, a people called the Lyrians. The word God is from this age-old foreign language and has nothing in the slightest part to do with creation. The word God from time immemorial had been used as a designation for human beings who, because of their spiritual and consciousness-based powers and their abilities resulting from them, were able to master and accomplish things which remained denied to kings and emperors. So these were the Ishwishes, the kings of wisdom, in the old days that I was talking about earlier, when these extraterrestrials were openly on the earth and visible to us. And that created a kind of psychic damage that we still have embedded within us. These religions that we have today, in many ways, were the gods of old presenting themselves as the creators of all things, when they were nothing like that. They were human beings in higher advanced stages of evolution. And I think we have a deep, very, very deep-seated fear about this. And many people have a deep-seated fear about life beyond Earth because of this. And we may be manipulated by the powers that be in the future because of this subconscious fear that we have. Now, these people that exist mostly in other space-time configurations, the Pleiaren are from a star system. They're people just like us. They're not spiritual beings. They are people just like us. They live in a star system that's in a different space-time configuration. Our universe is vast and enormous beyond our wildest imaginations, and there are 7 different space-time configurations in our universe. You see, the Meyer information is very, very profound, as you probably have already become aware of. Let me continue here about these gods of the past. However, catastrophes, unfortune, wars, etc., as well as slow degeneration over the course of the centuries, also demanded their tribute from these gods, who subsequently slowly died out or wandered off and only still remained in the memory, the conscious memory, of very few human beings. These were to blame that the ones named gods lived on in lores and legends and finally developed into a single expression named God. A few clever leaders seized upon the old lores and legends and from them formed a ruling, creating God being with the supposed laws and prohibitions, and already the religions were born. Out of this arose a God who was made responsible for all creation and who should personally personify the love. Only still lacking was the personification of evil and its naming. For that, a few clever minds reached into the history of the old Celts, who in ancient times revered a Superman, one of those named gods, as the god of the hunt, because he put in place his immense spiritual and conscious base powers for the benefit of the people of the hunt. This is where the concept of the devil came from. Ancient lores, etc., showed that this god, who had 2 horn-like growths on his skull, was named Tubal. Upon his death, his position became personified by a Celt who, with a change of name, called Tubal, and as a symbolism of the one named God, wore an animal skull with horns on his head, therefore imitating the Superman with his horn-like growths. Over the course of centuries and millennia, the name Tubal was changed countless times until the name Devil arose from it, a name that was seized upon by the young religions and the memory of the named Horn God. So that's where the devil came from. The god of the hunt with 2 horn-like growth structures coming out of his skull. So I think if you continue to study the Meyer information, if you continue to look at this information, you will understand the mental illness that the people of the earth are under. And it's quite phenomenal that we've been able to survive as long as we have. But it's time for us to grow out of these wrong thoughts. It's time for us to take control of our thoughts, because it's good thoughts, good feelings, good habits, which produce the good life circumstances. So be confident, optimistic, be cheerful, be enthusiastic, be in harmony, persevere, persist, endure, be satisfied, have hope. We should have hope. Control your thoughts. The Goblet of Truth has something about this. It says, you alone as human beings bring about everything, namely the good and the evil, the negative and the positive, because you alone are responsible for all and everything. Whatever you create in terms of thoughts and feelings, as well as in terms of actions, deeds, all your activity, you alone are the ones that bear the responsibility for the forming of your life conduct, your thinking directions, your determinations. So you yourself have to make an effort for the right guidance and forming of your existence. So it all comes down to our thinking, the power of our thoughts. Well, I hope you've enjoyed today's show, and I hope it's going to be useful as you continue to learn to control your thoughts and thereby control the circumstances of your life, control your habits, also control your feelings. Remember, you are the master of your own destiny. You are the forger of your own fortune. You create your own good luck through good thoughts, good feelings, good habits, and good circumstances. What you think, you make real. What you think about yourself, you become. You've been listening to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder. Have a great day.